Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fireside Chat 296. Mr. Tubbs is making an appearance. We have no idea for how long. We have put his favorite petrified wood in his bed, so at least you will see him in the beginning. He is still a puppy, ergo he's not aching to do what Otto did as a more mature dog and stay put for a while. But anyway, you see Mr. Tubbs. It is great to be with you. This is the week of July 4th, the American Independence Day. And I know that there are many of you who listen around the world. When I address issues that are specifically American, I don't think they're only of interest to Americans because the issues are universal. I very rarely, I can't even think of when I addressed issues that only applied to Americans. So this issue is something a lot of you might want to think about, but certainly those of you who are Americans. Well, how do I phrase it? What if you're not so proud of your country at a given moment? Well, at least we had that. How are you, little feller? What if you're not so proud of your country as perhaps you were, not perhaps, in my case, I was all of my life? How do you celebrate a patriotic day if you're disappointed in your country? And I am disappointed in my country. I can't deny that. So let me tell you how I deal with it. We put out the flag on July 4th because we celebrate the flag and we celebrate everything that it represents. Because everything good that it represents, and it really only represents good. That doesn't mean Americans only did good, but the flag did not represent slavery, for example. That was the flag that liberated slaves. That was the Union flag. We're not putting out the Confederate flag, those states that wanted to preserve slavery. We don't put their flag out. So I believe that American values, the American value system, remains the greatest answer to cruelty and evil in the world, the best way to produce a decent society. And I've written an entire book on it. It's called Still the Best Hope, Why the World Needs American Values to Prevail. Ironically, the book is more relevant today than when I published it. It is really three books. It's about America, really American values, leftist values, and Islamist, not necessarily Islamic, but Islamist values. It's three books in one. You'll understand the left better, perhaps, than reading anything else, and there are many great things about the left, but this is a lifetime of study of it, Adam of America. The American value system is what I call the American Trinity. There are three values on every coin and dollar bill in America. And they are E pluribus unum, which is Latin for from many one, and liberty, and in God we trust. I don't know of as good, I won't even say I don't know a better, I don't know of as good a national motto as those three. If you base a society on that, you will have a decent and good society. The left hates all three values. Again, I always distinguish between left and liberals. Liberals do not vote their values. Liberals vote for the left, and the left shares almost no liberal values. But I just want to make that clear. When I say left, I don't mean every liberal. But yes, I mean every leftist, because the moment you leave those values, you become a liberal or a conservative. They detest all three. Liberty has never been a left-wing value, never, never in the history of the left since the French Revolution to the Russian Revolution to the modern Western world. Wherever the left comes into power, liberty decreases. Wherever the left comes into power, dissent is suppressed. People are censored. Freedom of speech, like other freedoms, are not part of the leftist agenda. And we saw this during the lockdowns, and we see it now in the censorship that the big tech media do, who are run by the left. This is a very scary thing. So liberty is not a left-wing value. E pluribus unum is not a left-wing value. They don't believe from many one. They believe from many, many. That's why they constantly tell us that the notion in America of everybody becoming American, they think that's fascist. They do. That's what they really believe. They want everybody to have their own identity and not share an American identity. And that's why I say this is universal. I would like everyone in Hungary to have a Hungarian identity and everyone in France to have a French identity and everyone in Uruguay to have a Uruguayan identity. That doesn't mean you give up whatever culture you come from. I come from a traditional Jewish culture. I preserved it. I went to Jewish school. My kids went to Jewish schools. But they're American. They're proudly American. One doesn't negate the other. I live in an area where there are many Armenians. They send their kids to Armenian schools, and many of them wave the flag on July 4th. That's fine. E pluribus unum didn't say you obliterate whatever culture you have affirmed from your parents or grandparents. It meant that from many, many colors, many races, many religions, many national identities, we have one American identity, or we have chaos, which is exactly what we have now. And the third is in God we trust. If the values of the human being invaluable, if our rights don't come from our Creator, whom do they come from? The government? The government gives, then the government takes. Only if they come from God are they permanent. And that's in the American Declaration of Independence. Our Creator endowed us with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Our Creator endowed us. Who else can endow us? Governments? All the genocides of the 20th century were committed by big governments. Big governments can do good, but they generally don't. The bigger, the worse. Because power wielded by flawed human beings is going to lead to bad things. Always does. Since the French Revolution. So the founders of America wanted as small a government as possible to maximize the great value of every individual and liberty. So when I wave, my family puts out the American flag on July 4th, it is not because we're proud of what is happening in America now. It is because we affirm more than ever what that flag represents. And that is why leftists are not putting out the flag on July 4th. That's why they wouldn't even stand for it in football games in the United States. And they were the heroes of the New York Times and Time Magazine and CNN. Heroes. For not standing for the American flag, the flag for which so many Americans died to enable them to be free. It is such contempt for the people who fought for that flag to kneel when it is raised. Wow. Takes a special type of ingrate to kneel when the American flag is raised. All through the world, when people saw the American flag in the vast majority of cases, they identified it with being liberated, not enslaved. And that's why I put the flag out on July 4th. Not because I'm proud of what's happening now. I'm not. Okay, let's take a look at the questions. And here we go.
Hey, Mr. Prager. My name is Isaac Manor. I'm 15 years old. I live in Los Angeles, California, and a member of Prager Force. So my question to you is, what do you think the proper age to start dating is and why? Thank you, and I hope to meet you one day, sir.
I hope to meet you one day, sir. All right. I want you to know that is one of the briefest questions I ever got and one of the toughest. I don't have a perfect answer for this. I want you to understand that now. I will not give you an answer as much as I will give you, and obviously everybody listening and watching, considerations about the issue. So there are many competing elements with regard to what is the right age to start dating. So when we heard the question a few moments before the fireside chat, my wife, who was present, said, you should start dating when you, the male, can afford the date, when you work and you can afford to take a girl out on a date. We're assuming that it is a male-female dating. That is, after all, about 97% of the time. And so that's what I'm addressing. That's a possible answer. I would like to tell you my instinctive answer. We live in a bizarre, bizarre time where what we assumed for millennia was natural to the human being is actually being overturned and is no longer regarded as natural. I'll give you the example in a famous 1950s song, Love and Marriage Go Together Like a Horse and Carriage. That was the assumption. You fell in love, you got married. They go together like a horse and carriage. Because certainly for my generation as kids, basically guys were girl crazy and girls were guy crazy. And you know what? It's not bad. In retrospect, it beats what we have now to be career crazy or video game crazy. That's really what we've gotten rid of. We got rid of girl crazy and boy crazy, and what we have now is a pretty lousy substitute. I'm career crazy or I'm video game crazy. So my first reaction was, hey, if you start developing those muscles, as it were, of an instinctive desire to bond with the opposite sex, sounds good to me. That was my instinctive reaction. But there are many other considerations. The financial might have been one. I'll tell you one that was raised by Nate the Great. Silence. The room went silent. He didn't expect that, folks. He did not expect to be cited. Anyway, he raised a very important issue, and that is there is so much early sex, not to mention premarital sex, that's a consideration too. Do you want your 15? Do parents want their 15-year-olds to go on dates and quite potentially have sex? By the way, I have mentioned this in the past, and people are sort of surprised, I think, to hear me say this, because I am a libertarian on sexual matters. But I do believe that there was something, I'll use a term nobody likes, holy, so we'll drop holy, even though I purposely used it. But there's something special about intercourse. I do believe that. It's a belief. I can't prove it. And I think the cavalier attitude toward it has not done anybody any good, not men and not women. And I don't believe, for example, that you should do nothing before marriage. I don't think that's practical in a very real sense, because part of what makes a marriage work is chemistry. And if you don't know you have chemistry prior to marriage, it might be a gamble. This is not a hard and fast rule, but I wouldn't say do nothing prior to marriage. But I would say that holding off with intercourse is a very powerful statement that marriage is special. Okay, so putting that aside, everybody acknowledges that nobody has benefited from the sexual revolution. Nobody. the idea that women can have sex with no commitment and it be as enjoyable as it is for men. Men and women, by the way, are not the same, just for the record. On a trivial matter, men don't find things women do, just as an example. Ask any married couple how true that is. Most of the time, men don't even bother looking after a few years. They just ask their wife where it is. And it works. A few months ago, I was at a hotel in some city. I couldn't find my tablet. And, my tablet. And I actually called my wife back in California and said, I can't find the tablet. Where is it? And she told me, I give you my word. It's embarrassing, but it is true. Anyway, men and women are very different. And in the sexual realm, they're not from the famous book, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. It was, by the way, an excellent book, but it really understated the difference. That implies that men and women are from the same solar system. They're not. Men are from Andromeda and women are from another galaxy is more accurate. So this didn't benefit anybody. So this concern of having a sex at a very early age when on a date, that's a valid one. But they're all valid. My wife's concern, Nathan's concern, and my concern. I do want men and boys and girls to start wanting the other at an early age because they have to practice building those romantic muscles, if you will, in light of what is going on today with, I can't date. I'm too busy studying. I'm too busy for my career. Or, I'm not going to think about marriage. And by the way, dating, the ideal in a date is that you're dating to find a lifelong partner, or at least somebody to marry. Not all marriages end up as lifelong. I'm an example of that, and I know that. But still, marriage is a good thing. Talking about how good marriage is, I was just visiting my younger son in Pennsylvania, and my older son from Florida came with his kids. We had a wonderful time together in Pennsylvania. And I don't think that I am betraying a confidence in any way in revealing how beautifully I have seen my son develop as a result. Well, both sons, to be honest, but in particularly in the case of my younger son, and watching him mature thanks to marriage. Basically, look, I'm saying this with single people present, but they know that I adore them. Generally speaking, there is no human who has married that would deny that it matured them, even if the marriage goes sour. There is a growth that takes place in marriage that I don't know where else is available. There are many fine single people, and there are many awful married human beings. I mean, that's a given. But just in terms of growing up, it happened to me. It happened to, and I was pretty mature before I got married. But there's no comparison. I'll give you one little example that occurred to me on this family visit. So as a result of his getting married, guess what happened next? They got a house. That's a perfect example. Single people don't buy houses as a general rule. They rent an apartment, or many still live with parents. So the steps are so, and now what did he show me on this visit just last week? This is where, God willing, we're gonna have the room for the kid. You don't think about that when you're single. You're not buying a house, and you're not buying a house with a room for a kid. Those things make you grow up, and it's a beautiful thing to see. So this is like one of the longest answers to the shortest question I may have ever received. But it is all of these considerations are worthy of your and one's parents' consideration. How are we doing on time?
We're at 20.
Oh, we have a lot of time. Yeah, good. Very nice. Huh?
The opening was short.
Oh, the opening was relatively short. That's a good point. Okay. Joshua, 37, Kansas City, Missouri, USA. What's up, Dennis and Pup? I have been dealing with some pretty serious health problems over the last couple of years, and recently I was told by doctors that I don't have long to live. I am not giving up, and I know doctors can be wrong about these things. In the event that they are not wrong, do you have any advice for a young or middle-aged man who is facing what may be a long and excruciating death? Well, I certainly don't say no to questions. Not my first choice. But I'm touched that you asked. My heart goes out to you, and I'll offer you a few thoughts. I am a Christian, so I do not believe that death is the end. I am just not sure what to do or what to tell my family. Let me stop there. When I read this right before the fireside chat, I didn't quite understand that. I am just not sure what to do or what to tell my family. What to do is a separate question from what to tell your family. Are you thinking of hiding this from your family? It's hard for me to believe that you are. So what do you mean by what to tell my family? Am I right? Does it seem like the only thing is, does he tell his family what his prognosis is? Well, of course you do. And you tell your friends too. That's the point of friends and family. If you can't tell them, you know, I the doctor said I have a terminal illness. What can you tell them? You know, your feelings about where are you in Kansas City, the Chiefs' chances in the NFL next year. Well, what do you talk to them about? So that to me is a given. What to do? It's an interesting question because we all have a terminal illness. It's called life. And your question doesn't just apply when you're 37 and you have a terminal illness. It applies when you're 20 and you're healthy. What do I do, given that I will die one day, is as appropriate when you're healthy and 20 as when you're sick and 37 or 87? Too few people ask that question. I will say, at the risk of whatever risk I'm taking, talking about myself here, I had a real advantage in life knowing in high school that I was going to die. I didn't have any illness. I've always been healthy. I'm very, 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 very lucky. But I knew I was going to die. I have a chapter on that in my happiness book, which I wrote, let's see, 24 years ago. And I call it the tragic view of life, which makes you happier, oddly enough. I didn't know it the way I know it today, much older, because there's knowing and there's knowing in your gut. So I knew, but I knew intellectually, we'll all die. And as I write in my book, not only will I die, everyone I love will die one day, hopefully after me. But that's the nature of the world. So the question is, what do I do? That's the question everybody should ask, knowing that the time is limited. And you don't know, no one knows how much time they'll have. Nobody. There are a lot of accidents in this world, from drunk drivers to overdosing to fentanyl. I mean, there are a lot of people who didn't think they would die did end up dying. You don't know when, no one knows. That's why you have to live fully every day, every single day. That's why also, back to my earlier comment, well, I'll work on my career and then I'll get married. Well, how do you know? How do you know you'll have time to get married? Your question is as pertinent to a healthy person as it is to you. But you must tell your family. My relatives all love my cooking, so I have been putting together a recipe book for them so they will know how to make their favorite foods when I am gone. Well, so then I assume, well, no, that doesn't mean you have told them. You're just, I'm glad you're doing this book. In that regard, by the way, I have begged everybody who has ever heard me speak, write your autobiography. Leave that legacy for those who love you. Other than that, I'm not sure what to do. Do what is meaningful. You know what? Do what you would do if you didn't have a death sentence. That's what you should do. But you have to cram in stuff. Travel. It's interesting about get married. There are people with terminal illnesses who've gotten married. And they're obviously the spouse knew that they had a terminal illness, but they loved them. Live life is my best and perhaps not particularly profound answer. Thank you so much. I love you. And should I miraculously pull through this, I hope to be a wise man like you someday. Oh, that's very sweet. By the way, the number of men who tell me they love me is very touching to me. Just thought I'd throw that out. Heidi, 21 years old, Sonja, Norway. Greetings, Mr. Prager, and welcome, Mr. Tubbs. Mr. Tubbs. I have just discovered that I am pregnant. It was not in our plans just yet, but I'm very excited to be a mother. I'm in a stable, loving marriage of 3 years with a good man. By the way, nobody expected that, right? I just discovered I'm pregnant. We didn't think she's married for 3 years. Okay. However, I worry that as he isn't carrying it inside him, that is my husband, the baby is probably a more abstract concept for him than it is for me. How would you advise him to prepare in the coming months and build character so that he can become a responsible father and role model for our baby? Well, that's a fun question. It's a serious one. So, yes, it is more abstract for us than it is for you. Of course, we're not carrying the baby. That is correct. I have a very touching story in that regard. So I have two sons, and one is biological and one is adopted. And I try to explain to people that there is no, in my heart and in my mind, there is absolutely no difference. And people believe me because they know my beliefs in general. And I'm not very blood-oriented. I'm not race-oriented. I'm not blood-oriented. I'm human-oriented. Are you a good person? I love you. Fine. End of issue. You're not good, but you're related to me. I don't love you. It's just the way it goes. Does everybody love every relative? I mean, give me a break. It's not like I said something heretical. So anyway, I explained to people, when was the first time I saw my biological son? In the hospital when he was born, right? When is the first time I saw my adopted son? In the hospital the day he was born. What the hell's the difference? I didn't carry number one. I didn't carry number two. They showed up. That's it. Now, it's a very interesting thing. Is there a bond that the mother has deeper on day one than perhaps the father? That may very well be. To which my response is, so what? So what? How long did it take for me to love our kid as much as my then wife loved our kid? I don't know the answer. A week? A month? I don't know. But pretty soon, the love was identical. No father who loses a child, God forbid, and I know a lot of men who've lost children, as I do know women. Their pain is as intense with having not carried the child as the mother's pain. It's your child, and that ends the issue. So what can he do to prepare? Get as much sleep as possible, because he won't have that much when your child is born. Good luck. Okay. 21 in Norway.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you like to meet that couple? That would be nice. It's time already?
It is time.
Another intense fireside chat. So, yeah, what did we talk about? The meaning of patriotism. That's a universal one. And then the dating is good. Death. Dating, death, birth. We covered the gamut, didn't we?
We did.
See you next week, everybody.
Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.